Welcome to the Full Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 8:59 Greenwich Mean Time. Today is November 2nd. Today being Friday, it's the big picture, long-term audio for the various different asset classes. If we have a review of what's been happening this week, then stock markets were generally steady until today, and the Nasdaq finished down the day on the day about 1.25%, the Dow Jones by about 1%, the S&P by less than 1%, and Europe was relatively steady. The FTSE closed out the week. It was just up 0.1% today. The IBEX up 1%. The DAX up 0.38% today. The Nikkei was stronger by over 1% today. The Hang Seng by 1.3%. And the ASX, which has been pulling back for most of the week, was relatively steady in here. The Chinese market, which has lost downward momentum, and rallied well intra-week, improved on that performance in here today. In the precious metal markets, gold was relatively steady and bounced from the $1,700 area earlier on this week and gave up the entire advance in here today. It was hit with a haymaker. It was down $36. It's down to $1,678. It's now completely unwound the overbought condition relative to the 200-day moving average and unwound more than half of its earlier advance. We're back into an area where it could potentially find support. I was stopped out of my long position in here today, and I'll be looking to buy it back, but not until I see some sign that there is some steadying coming in here. Such has been the speed of the decline, then the chances are that there is going to be some time required in order to build support, rebuild confidence before significantly higher prices are going to be seen. The dollar was firm in here today. The euro had been strengthening for much of the week. It gave up almost the entire advance in here today, and it's down to 128.35, down a full cent. And the pound is down over a full cent. US treasuries were relatively unchanged in here today, and the commodity complex generally was really quite weak. Soybeans in particular were down 33, and they had firmed here in the region of 1500, and they're still at 1526, but a couple of more days like today would unwind quite a bit of the positive aspect that the chart has taken on over the last few weeks. It is timely to point out that what's happening in markets is not entirely market focused. We have some really rather large political upheavals happening at present, not least in the USA but also in China. You have the US election on Tuesday, and it isn't beyond the bounds of possibility that we're seeing some money getting taken off the table in advance of that event. A little bit of selling the rumor and potentially buying the news, which could occur at some point on Wednesday. But in the meantime, this is the point of maximum uncertainty. And while the betting shops are basically giving President Obama the greater chance of winning, investors aren't going to be happy until we get the result of this election. And later this month, the decennial change of power in China is going to take place, and then it will run with various ceremonies and handing over of various positions to the new administration for approximately 6 months afterwards. Given the fact that there has been such a large degree of upheaval politically, and particularly the Bo Xilai affair, then people will be watching to make sure that this occurs peacefully. The fact that the Chinese stock market has lost downward momentum and is potentially in a bottoming out phase, and that the Shanghai A-share is around that 2000 area, and that fundamentally the market is certainly not expensive. And in fact, fundamentals and PE ratios and dividend yields are back to areas from which major rallies have occurred previously. It does look like that market is waiting for a catalyst, and the removal of uncertainty could certainly help in that regard. And the European situation continues to rattle on, but the fact that there is now a clear delineation between politics and policy really is heartening. So while you still have a few errant politicians banging at their own particular policies, or trying to say that one country is not going to help another, or that one country is not going to toe the line, either as a debtor or a creditor. And certainly you have politicians who are in power attempting to pander to their various factions within their own parties. But that's politics. And the policy is very different, because if we look at what is actually happening, then the fiscal treaty was passed. The resolution to the banking crisis is in the works. And where anyone has expressed the opinion to roll back on the commitments that were made last July, they've been pulled back into line. And the path toward further integration and cohesion within Europe is pretty well tread, and that is likely to remain the case. So the fact that the Eurozone crisis has been such a focus of attention for the last couple of years is diminishing, and the crisis is moving now more towards resolution. And Japan is also notable this week, because the yen has been weak and has been weaker than the US dollar. And today was a day where the dollar rallied rather impressively and against most currencies. And yet, in previous occasions when that has occurred, the yen has rallied even more. And that didn't happen today. The yen has fallen below the 80 yen level against the dollar, or the dollar has rallied above 80 yen. And that countermands the downside key reversal that was posted about 10 days ago. That should act as a tailwind for the Japanese stock market. And Japan is also moving towards its own political upheaval, but in this occasion it would be at the central bank. And the president of the BOJ, Mr. Shirakawa, will be retiring in the first quarter of next year. And that will open up the potential that they're going to get someone who has more monetary stimulus in mind, and there's every likelihood that that is the type of person that they're going to put in there. And that would suggest that the fact now that the yen is weakening may be beginning to indicate that investors are betting that whoever takes over at the helm of the BOJ is going to really attack the currency and print with abandon in an attempt to get the currency lower and stimulate the domestic export-oriented sector of the economy. And if that does occur, then that will act as a significant tailwind for Japanese equities. And the Nikkei was strong for most of the week, and at 9,000 points is approaching the upper side of its range. And it does look like that, not least because Japanese equities are no longer expensive. There was a long time that I've often heard it said, at least in the last decade, that Japanese equities traded at higher P's, and that's just the way it was. Well, over the last 3 years, those P's have contracted quite considerably, and they're on a par with those that are evident in just about anywhere else. So given the fact that they have come down so much, Japanese equities now are back to areas on a PE basis they haven't been in quite some time. So it does look like an undervalued asset class. The fact that Hong Kong is leading to the upside in China is also a point in its favor. And Chinese equities are also an asset class where most people have really not been for quite some time. And it is interesting that the greatest safe haven of them all, which has been Wall Street, and the best performing of the major economies, and certainly the major stock markets, has been Wall Street this year. And we're back now to an area where the S&P is currently at 1,414, and that 1,400 area does represent a bit of a Rubicon, because it's approximating the 200-day moving average and the upper side of the underlying trading range. And if the uptrend is going to remain consistent, it will find support in this area. We've seen a large number of US equities move into a process of mean reversion, and that doesn't look like it's over just yet. Today's earnings by Starbucks were really very heartening, not least because the boost to their earnings was from US demand. And it has been Starbucks' international business which has been driving the growth over the last few years. So it is very much heartening to see that its US business is improving. And today's upward dynamic happened exactly where it needed to, because the share has been ranging below its peak for the last few months, and it will need to hold this week's lows if the benefit of the doubt is to be given to the upside. And if it can push significantly up out of this couple of month range, then the chances are that the medium term uptrend can be reasserted. But Starbucks is very much in our autonomies category, and that sector continues to outperform because it is leveraged to the growth of the global consumer. And we're in the greatest age of humanity that there is ever likely to be. Hundreds of millions of people are being lifted out of poverty and into the middle classes, and the companies that are able to really leverage their products to these nascent consumers continue to do very well. But what we also see is that because the autonomies are represented by just about every sector, that there is rotation. And something that has been evident for the last few months is a rotation out of some of the pure consumer-oriented shares and into the more industrial-oriented shares, so miners and chemical companies and manufacturers, oil companies, oil service companies. And we're seeing that a number of those types of companies, which are more leveraged to global growth rather than the growth of the consumer, are beginning to look like they're under accumulation. And if that's the case, then all of the worries that there have been about the slowing global economy and the fiscal cliff and the Eurozone crisis and China's housing bubble and the Japanese lost decades, then some of that may be overdone. And the big question is how much of it is already in the price. And if we're looking at those industrially oriented shares, then the fact that they have pulled back so much and are beginning to find support, and we're seeing an increasing number of them breaking up out of those bases, suggests that that part of the stock market could move to a position of outperformance. And when we look at Starbucks, or we look at McDonald's or Nike, then they are in a corrective phase, and they're unlikely to be the star performers in the next 6 months that they have been in the last 18 months. So we are getting a rotation even within the autonomy sector. US government bonds didn't rally in here today. Even though stock markets were weak and the dollar was firm, we haven't had the same kind of strength and momentum move in that market of late than that we have had during other periods of market weakness. And at least part of the reason for that is because yields are at incredibly low levels, and the negative real yields that are evident on so many fixed income instruments is a very harsh reality for the majority of savers. And the fact that it is in the equities that you have the better yields and the stronger balance sheets is, I think, a point that is increasingly poignant for a large number of investors. And high-quality equities represent an undervalued asset class from the perspective of the majority of investors. Gold continues to pull back from the $1,800 area. It remains the ultimate hedge for those that are concerned with the debasement of fiat currencies that is going on with central banks, and with central banks attempting to competitively devalue their currencies, and with governments taking on ever more debt and socializing an increasing amount of private debt, then people are looking at the possibility that government bonds are not going to be the safe haven that they have been. And they represent the last great bubble. And we characterize a bubble by a market where people are looking at some of the highest prices in history and considering them cheap, but also where you have a market that has seen an explosion in supply and people falling over themselves to take it up. And that's exactly what we've had in the bond markets. And when we look at bonds on a total return basis, since they are a yield or a dividend-paying instrument, then we can see that it has one of the most consistent uptrends over the last 30 years. And it makes it very easy to monitor that type of uptrend, because when it breaks its progression of higher reaction lows and when it sustains a move below its 200-day moving average, then that bull market will be over and will be in a new secular bear market where instruments that can pay out a yield in excess of inflation are going to be at a premium. And that's when we'll see some significant yield compression as investors move into the types of companies that can pay competitive yields and the types of instruments that pay competitive yields. In the meantime, people continue to look at gold, and gold pulled back extraordinarily sharply in here today. And it does suggest that the pullback that has been going on from the $1,800 area isn't over. And a clear upward dynamic would really be required to suggest that demand is returning to dominance beyond the very short term. It is becoming a little bit overbought in the short term, and it has pulled back towards the 200-day moving average, but that upward dynamic will be required to suggest that the demand component is returning to dominance. Now, gold has been ranging between $1,550 and $1,800 for approximately a year, and it encountered resistance at the upper side last month, and it's pulling back towards the first area of, the next area of potential support, which is the 200-day moving average. It's there right now, and if it fails to find support there, then the next area of potential support is somewhere around 1640. Which is the upper side of the underlying trading range. So there's every chance that gold is going to find support somewhere in the next $40. And having unwound the short-term overbought condition relative to the 200-day moving average, it's back into a potential area where accumulation could begin once more. But we will need to see evidence that that is about to occur. There is every chance, and it's certainly been our contention that gold is back into the accumulation phase of this range. And if that remains the case, then it will find support at a progressively higher level, and that would be above $1,600. So we are back into a very interesting area for the precious metals generally. And with gold pulling back, the other precious metals have also pulled back sharply, but they are also coming back into buying ranges in here. So it is looking like a really quite an interesting area at present. Newmont Mining came out with rather disappointing figures on its cost structure today, and Barrick Gold was punished yesterday for something very similar. And it highlights just how difficult it is for these miners to control their costs. And the ones that do control their costs are outperforming, and those that can't are being punished. And it's creating a dichotomy in the market. And there's this incredible difference between the winners and losers. And it makes stock picking that bit more important in the gold mining sector. And when we look at the oil market, oil was backed by $2, pulled back by $2.30 on West Texas Intermediate today. It's back to $84.79. And Brent crude also pulled back, and I think it was around 106 in here today. And Brent crude breaking down from that short-term range is extending its decline. It's looking increasingly likely that it is going to pull back towards the $100 area. And that is becoming a less stiff headwind for the global economy. The shale oil and shale gas boom in America is becoming an increasingly global phenomenon. And particularly with natural gas, the fact that because of the way that Europe has gone about its energy policy, attempting to move more towards renewable energy rather than concentrating on natural gas, means that it is actually burning more coal than it ever has before. And it isn't within shooting distance of the Kyoto Agreement. Whereas the USA, which didn't sign the Kyoto Agreement, has seen its emissions drop back to those that existed in 1992 because of the prevalence of gas usage and the fact that an increasing number of utilities are using gas rather than coal because it's simply cheaper. And if nothing else, that's a lesson about governments interfering in markets where they really have no place. In a government's role in terms of regulation should be in terms of capital appreciation and in capital formation, and outside of that, attempting to push an ideology onto the market has seldom worked. And that is no more. That is certainly the case also with high frequency trading. The volatility that we've seen in markets remains very much a concern, and particularly retail investors are deserting the stock market because of the volatility and because they don't feel that there's a level playing field. And when we look on regulation, what has happened over the last number of decades is a gaming of the system in favor of speculators. And the semblance that there was some level of equality of opportunity for traders and investors has been thrown to the wayside. And the first principle of regulation has to be to protect the capital formation role of the market. And the type of activity and scalping that is going on right now acts contrary to that first principle, in which case it's in need of regulation. Europe has already moved to ban naked trading of CDS contracts. And I think that similarly aggressive moves need to be made in the high-frequency trading. And the simple reason for that is that the number of high-frequency trading funds continues to multiply. And the number of trades that they are putting in, regardless of whether they're executed upon or not, continues to multiply. And as the number of these funds increases and the number of trades that they are putting on increases, then the likelihood of another flash crash is also multiplying. And we saw one of those in India last month, and there is every likelihood that this type of activity could be, I think it represents a clear and present danger to the integrity of the markets. And if I was to answer the question, what was the greatest risk at present to the market, I think I would have to say that it is high frequency trading. And it is crying out for regulation. And until we get some form of regulation, then it's going to be very difficult to get people to have confidence in the ability of the markets to form capital and really give people a return without the kind of volatility that we've had to put up with over the last 3 years in particular. When we take a big step back, we remain very much within a secular bull market in terms of the global consumer. In the meantime, in the medium term, there is this amount of political uncertainty that continues to weigh on markets. And while Wall Street has held up rather well in the last few weeks, it will need to continue to hold, and the S&P will need to continue to hold in the region of 1400 if the medium-term uptrend is to continue to be given the benefit of the doubt. But what we are seeing is that the industrial complex is moving to a position of outperformance. And because they're cheap, there's less likely to be a significant drawdown, and they represent the area that is likely to provide the sectors of outperformance over the next few months, regardless of what actually happens with the wider markets, which are increasingly influenced by some of the very major caps. And Apple's influence on the wider market really does have a very large impact on the headline figures for the performance of various indices, but it doesn't say a great deal about what's actually happening inside those indices, and particularly among some of the companies that represent less of an influential weighting. I'll be in London tomorrow and taking the early flight in the morning, and I'll be talking at the World Money Show. I think I've got a 1 hour talk and a 3 hour talk. And I'm rather looking forward to that. And if I see any of you there, I'll be looking forward to it. And in the meantime, I wish you all a happy weekend and all the best to all of you.